Have you ever been right at the finish line of buying something online? Or, I don't know, maybe you standing at a physical cash register and you just get this sudden creeping feeling that something is wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Like your stomach kind of drops a little bit.
Right. The screen is lagging, or the clerk is aggressively tapping the terminal while muttering about a shared login or
Or
something.
the digital checkout page just looks, well, structurally unstable, yeah.
Exactly. You can't quite put your finger on it, but your instinct just tells you to guard your wallet. I mean, have you ever just abandoned a purchase completely because the experience felt fundamentally untrustworthy?
I think we all have, honestly. It is a profound psychological trigger. When it comes to our credit cards, we have this highly sensitive internal alarm system.
Yeah, we really do.
And once that alarm rings, the transaction is usually just dead. You walk away.
And decoding that exact instinct is our mission today. We are doing a deep dive into a really fascinating strategic guide titled PCI Compliance for Orange County Retailers, IT Controls That Protect Payments.
Which I know sounds like a mouthful.
It does. I know the immediate reaction to the phrase PCI compliance is usually to just let your eyes glaze over. You might be wondering why we're dissecting an IT compliance guide for 2026.
Right, it sounds a bit dry on the surface.
But the goal of this deep dive is to uncover a massive, often ignored business reality. We're going to look at how the messy, unseen back-end reality of payment security is directly driving your front-end customer trust.
It's all connected.
Yeah, it drives your search visibility and ultimately your conversion rates.
To really understand the stakes here, you have to look at who this strategy is actually written for. I mean, this document is not some technical manual for server room engineers.
Not at all.
It is aimed squarely at retail owners, finance managers, and operations leaders who are navigating the Orange County market.
Which is an incredibly specific and competitive space.
Exactly. That region is a hyper-competitive, high-expectation environment. Customers there, they don't view a flawless, secure digital experience as some sort of nice perk.
Right, it's not a bonus.
No, they demand it as a baseline. If a retailer's payment workflow has friction, they aren't just facing a potential regulatory fine from some agency. They are bleeding daily revenue.
Because modern consumers simply do not forgive friction.
They just leave. They go to the competitor.
Which brings us to the first major hurdle the source material identifies. Before a business can even attempt to fix its compliance, the leadership team has to, look in the mirror and admit what the actual root cause of the problem is.
And the root cause is almost never what leadership assumes it is.
Never.
The core argument laid out in this strategy is that most organizations do not struggle with payment security because they lack the right software tools.
Right. They think, oh, we just need to buy another tool.
Exactly. The answer is not to go buy another expensive security dashboard. Organizations struggle because of incredibly messy human and operational factors.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the document gets ruthlessly specific about the warning signs of this operational mess.
It really pulls no punches.
It lists things like unsegmented networks, shared credentials, old point-of-sale systems, unmonitored vendor access, weak logging, and totally unclear responsibility.
A laundry list of operational nightmares.
Yeah, let's actually break some of those down because they sound like IT jargon, but they represent human behavioral failures. Let's start with unsegmented networks. What does that actually mean in practice?
So think of it like the architecture of a physical bank. You would never, ever put the main vault containing millions of dollars in the middle of the public lobby right next to the front doors.
No, of course not.
You segment it. You put it behind specific walls with highly restricted access. Well, in a digital environment, an unsegmented network means a retailer has their sensitive payment processing data traveling along the exact same digital pathways as the guest Wi-Fi.
Wait, really? The same pathway where customers are like scrolling through social media?
Exactly. So if a customer's phone has a vulnerability or a hacker accesses that public Wi-Fi, there are absolutely no internal walls stopping them from walking right over to the point of sale data.
Wow. So it's essentially leaving the vault door propped open to the lobby.
That's exactly what it is.
And then you add in things like shared credentials and weak logging. Like if I have five different employees all logging into the primary register using the password register one,
Which happens all the time.
right,
Yeah.
and a critical payment file gets deleted or copied, weak logging means the system has literally no memory of who actually did it.
Precisely. You've severed human accountability. You can't train the person who made the mistake, and you can't identify malicious behavior because you've relied on human memory and manual effort, instead of structural control.
It's crazy.
It is. That is an operational failure, not a software deficit.
You know, I look at this like a high-end restaurant. Imagine walking into a beautiful dining room. The lighting is pristine. The menus are printed on heavy cardstock. The music is perfectly curated.
That's lovely.
But behind the swinging doors, the kitchen is an absolute war zone. The walk-in freezer is broken. No one knows who is working the grill. Tickets are falling on the floor. Eventually, no matter how beautiful that dining room is, the customer is going to taste the chaos in the food.
The operational mess always finds a way to introduce itself to the consumer. Always.
I do want to push back on that a bit, though.
Yeah.
If I am an operations leader, my instinct is to say, sure, the back-end IT network is a bit chaotic, but a customer shopping for a sofa online or buying clothes in a boutique, they can't see the unsegmented network.
Right. They don't know the tech stack.
Exactly. They don't know what our logging policy is. How does that specific back-end issue actually reach the consumer?
Well, they feel the downstream effects of the friction. The customer doesn't need a degree in network architecture to know that the checkout page just timed out for the third time in a row.
Oh, that makes sense.
When these back-end issues exist, they create massive obstacles for the employees, too. A clerk dealing with an outdated point-of-sale system that constantly freezes, well, they're going to be slow to answer questions.
Yeah, they're probably stressed out, too.
They are. They have to restart the terminal. The customer has to wait, wondering if their card was charged twice. The source points out that weak execution on the back end creates a poor digital experience, inconsistent proof of security, and totally unclear trust signals on a website.
So it's not a glaring error message necessarily, it's just a general vibe of brokenness.
Right. It quietly but steadily erodes front-end trust. And when trust drops, conversion dies.
It's a slow leak, not a loud alarm. So if we accept that the real problem is operational messiness rather than, you know, a lack of technology, the obvious question becomes, how does a management team systematically clean up this kitchen without shutting down the entire restaurant for a month?
The strategy provides a highly structured three-phase playbook to solve exactly that. It's designed to transition a business from chaos to control without completely overwhelming the staff.
Okay, so what is phase one?
Phase one is strictly about being narrow and important.
Meaning, do not try to fix everything at once.
You cannot boil the ocean. Phase one dictates very specific, immediate actions. First, you have to document your payment flows.
What does that entail?
It means you must literally map out the exact journey a credit card number takes from the moment it is swiped to the moment it hits your bank. If you don't know the path, you can't guard it.
That makes total sense.
Then you limit access, segment those networks we just talked about, patch outdated systems, and review your third-party vendors. The rule for phase one is that the output must be a documented, tangible improvement.
It cannot just be a planning meeting where everyone agrees to do better.
Exactly. You actually have to build the wall around the vault.
Okay. So once the immediate fires are out, the playbook moves to phase two, which is all about measurement. And I found this section completely counterintuitive.
How so?
Well, when I think of IT metrics, I think of server uptime or bandwidth or ping speeds. But the metrics this guide demands are entirely focused on business outcomes.
What's fascinating here is how it forces a total shift in perspective. You are no longer measuring the technology. You are measuring what the technology enables.
Which is a huge difference.
It really is. The strategy dictates that success is measured by response time, conversion rate, risk reduction, fewer support tickets, better search visibility, and stronger lead quality.
I am struggling to see the direct causality there, honestly. How does securing a payment network lead to fewer support tickets or better search visibility?
Think about the root cause of those support tickets. If your IT controls are failing, payments glitch. Customers get double charged, or they receive error messages, or their accounts get locked.
And then they immediately call your support desk in a total panic.
Exactly. When you clean up the payment flow, those errors vanish and the support tickets drop. It's a direct correlation.
Okay, what about search visibility, though?
Regarding search visibility, search engines heavily penalize websites that load slowly or lack secure, optimized back-end architecture. By cleaning up the IT controls, your site performance improves, user experience improves, and search engines reward that stability.
Ah, that makes perfect sense. You are optimizing the foundation.
Right.
So that leads to phase three, standardized ownership. This is where a useful, temporary project has to be transformed into a repeatable operating habit.
Yes. Someone has to actively own the maintenance, the reporting, and the vendor coordination moving forward. If you fail to standardize ownership, you step on a massive landmine.
Yeah, the guide is very explicit about this trap. The mistake is treating PCI compliance as a one-time single task. It is not a box you check and then just forget about for a year.
No, it is an ongoing operating discipline. If you treat it like a finite project, the exact same vulnerabilities will reappear the very minute a staff member turns over.
Or a vendor updates their software.
Right. Or someone in marketing decides to plug a fancy new analytics tool into the network. Without standardized ownership, organizing your network is like organizing a messy garage without setting any rules for where the tools go.
By next weekend, it will be a complete disaster again.
Exactly.
But, you know, a three-phase playbook is just a piece of paper if no one internally actually agrees on who's in charge of it or how the company is going to pay for it.
Oh, budget and ownership are where things usually fall apart.
Right. We have to look at how a business manages and funds this without it turning into a massive internal turf war.
Well, the strategy document proposes a fascinating solution to this called the dual owner model. It argues that this level of compliance needs two distinct owners.
Okay, who are they?
You need a business owner, like a retail owner or a finance manager, who is responsible for defining why this work matters to the bottom line.
Okay.
And alongside them, you need a technical or marketing owner who defines the practical, on-the-ground steps of how it actually gets done.
I see why that is necessary. It really solves the classic corporate stalemate.
It does.
Because if a project is only owned by the business side, it becomes entirely abstract. They talk about enhancing security synergy or whatever, but no one actually unplugs the old router.
Exactly. And conversely, if it is only owned by the IT department, it becomes so heavily technical that the executive team can't evaluate it, they don't understand it, and they don't care about it.
The dual owner model forces the two sides to translate for each other.
It creates a system of mutual accountability. The IT owner has to prove the business value of their technical work, and the business owner has to provide the resources for the technical reality. Which, of course, brings us to the budget.
So what does this all mean when it comes to the budget? Because fixing IT controls just sounds like a mandate to write blank checks until the IT department is happy.
It can feel that way. But the guide approaches budgeting very pragmatically by splitting the costs into two specific categories, urgent fixes and maturity improvements.
Okay, what's the difference?
Urgent fixes are the critical vulnerabilities, actively threatening the business things, affecting immediate security, conversion, uptime, or really obvious compliance gaps.
Those are the broken locks on the front door. You don't debate those. You just pay to fix them.
Exactly. Maturity improvements are different. That budget goes toward making the system stronger and more automated over time. That covers advanced reporting, automation tools, ongoing staff training, and governance documentation.
The most compelling part of the budget discussion, though, is how the guide frames the initial request. Instead of walking into a boardroom and asking, hey, what is this going to cost? The strategy dictates that the first question must be about the cost of inaction.
It forces leadership to quantify the risk. You have to ask, what happens to our revenue if we leave this unsegmented network unresolved for another quarter?
Right. What level of operational friction or loss of search visibility is actually acceptable to us?
When you frame it as the cost of inaction, the budgeting process becomes entirely objective. You stop arguing over the price of a software license and you start measuring acceptable risk.
And part of managing that risk involves holding your outside partners accountable too. If an Orange County retailer is hiring an external IT vendor to implement these controls, the strategy demands strict partner accountability.
Oh, absolutely.
Specifically requiring plain language reporting.
This is non-negotiable. Leadership should not need a technical decoder ring to understand a vendor's report.
But let me play devil's advocate again here for a second. Aren't external IT vendors hired specifically because they understand the complex technical language that leadership doesn't? Why force them to strip away the technical details?
Because the technical details are only a means to an end. If a vendor simply hands an operations leader a massive spreadsheet listing 50 patched servers, they aren't providing actionable intelligence.
It's just noise.
It is. The vendor must connect their implementation details directly to the business outcomes we discussed in phase two. They need to explain, in plain English, how patching those 50 servers improved the checkout conversion path, reduced the liability risk, or increased system uptime.
So it has to be translated into business value.
If leadership cannot read the report, they cannot make informed business decisions based on it. It's that simple.
Okay, now we reach the pivot in the strategy that I found completely unexpected. We have spent this entire time talking about getting the internal house in order.
We have.
We've cleaned up the networks, we've organized the teams, and secured the budget. But this document isn't just an internal IT manual. It actually functions as an SEO and marketing plan for June 2026.
Here's where it gets really interesting. This is where compliance transforms from a defensive necessity into an offensive asset.
Yeah. Once your IT controls are functioning securely, how do you actually broadcast that reality to the market to build digital trust and visibility?
The guide calls this the W20 June plan. The core objective is to translate all this back-end technical compliance work into topical authority and high-quality backlink partnerships.
It takes a topic like payment security, which is traditionally just a dry internal checklist, and turns it into a public resource designed to capture long-tail search demand.
Yes, for terms like payment security Orange County or retail IT compliance. It is brilliant because it recognizes that B2B buyers or highly cautious consumers are actively searching for those exact terms online.
Right. And a webpage that merely educates the reader is weak. But a page that explains the complexity of payment security, proves that the business has mastered it, and then guides the reader toward a specific implementation path. That is how you build true topical authority in the eyes of a search engine.
And the strategy provides a literal 30-day action checklist for executing this.
What's on the checklist?
In the first 30 days of publishing a compliance strategy online, the business has to verify specific technical SEO elements. They need to confirm the page is properly indexed by search engines, ensure the SEO titles and meta descriptions are compelling, validate that the focus key phrase is naturally integrated.
And this was the term that caught me. They have to validate the FAQ schema. Mm. What exactly is an FAQ schema, and why does a retail operations manager need to care about it?
Okay, think of FAQ schema as a piece of hidden translator code on your website.
Translator code.
Yeah. When a customer types a question into a search engine, the search engine scans millions of pages looking for the answer. Schema is code that explicitly flags your content, telling the search engine, hey, here's the exact question, and here's our definitive answer.
Oh, wow.
It effectively spoon-feeds your expertise directly into the search results, so the customer sees your authoritative answer before they even click the link to your website.
So it's wrapping your compliance knowledge in a format the search engine perfectly understands.
Exactly. But to rank highly, the guide insists you need strong internal and external trust signals.
Let's look at the internal signals first. The source emphasizes guiding readers to actual implementation support, and it cites Technisian's resources as the model for this.
Right, because you cannot just highlight a problem for the reader and leave them hanging. You have to show them the solution within your own ecosystem.
Give them the next step.
By organically linking to specific services like compliance IT support in Orange County or cybersecurity services or managed IT services, you demonstrate that you have the practical tools to solve the theoretical problem.
Which also helps the search engine.
It does. These internal links help search engines map the architecture of your site, reinforcing your topical authority.
But you can't just link to yourself, right? You need external validation to ground your claims. The strategy requires linking to credible, established external standards, specifically naming the PCI Security Standards Council.
And the placement of that external link is critical. You cannot just dump it in a lazy bibliography at the very bottom of the page.
Like a college essay.
Right. You have to integrate it naturally into the body of the text.
Yeah.
Right, where it supports a specific claim about cloud architecture or data encryption. It proves to the reader and to the search engine's algorithm that you are an active, informed participant in the broader global conversation about payment security.
But just like the IT controls in phase three, you can't just publish this content and walk away. You have to measure its success over time. And the guide warns against a very specific trap here, measuring activity instead of measuring outcomes.
Publishing the web page does not prove success. Holding a meeting about the web page does not prove success.
Right.
You have to look at the metrics that indicate actual market traction. Are you seeing an increase in search impressions and clicks? Is the page moving up in the ranking for your target keywords?
Are you tracking assisted conversions where this page played a role in a sale?
Exactly. And the ultimate test the guide outlines is internal adoption. Are your own sales and customer service teams actually using this content?
Oh, that's interesting. So if a prospect is comparing vendors and asking difficult questions about data security,
your sales team proactively sends them this compliance guide to eliminate those objections before they even fully form. That is when you know the strategy is truly working. it ceases to be an isolated blog post and becomes a functional tool for revenue generation.
It perfectly encapsulates the overarching philosophy of the entire guide. The strongest signal of success in this arena is not achieving immediate, flawless perfection.
No, it's about demonstrating controlled, measurable progress.
We've covered an immense amount of ground here today. We started by acknowledging that the real threat isn't a lack of software, but the messy reality of shared passwords and unsegmented networks.
The human element.
Yeah. We walked through the three-phase playbook to systematically clean up that operational chaos. We explored the necessity of the dual-owner model to force alignment between business and IT.
And finally, we looked at how to translate that hard-won internal security into a digital marketing asset that drives real search visibility.
The entire journey is about taking PCI compliance, which most businesses view as a dreaded, expensive, technical chore, and transforming it into a managed, accountable business capability.
It really becomes a competitive advantage that directly protects your revenue and builds unshakable customer trust in a market that demands nothing less.
It changes the narrative from, we have to do this to avoid a fine, to, we are doing this to win the market.
Which leaves you with an entirely different angle to consider when you think about the long-term life cycle of a business.
How so?
Well, think about the next time your company introduces a shiny new software tool to improve your workflow.
It happens all the time.
Right. Before you get excited about the features, ask yourself, is this actually solving a fundamental business problem? Or is it just adding another shared login to a network that's already unsegmented and vulnerable?
Oh, wow. That puts an entirely different perspective on things.
It does. Because when a larger entity comes in to buy a business eventually, they perform exhaustive due diligence. If they pull back the curtain and find the chaotic restaurant kitchen we described earlier, unsegmented networks, shared logins, undocumented payment flows, the valuation of that company plummets instantly.
The buyer just sees massive, unmitigated risk.
Exactly. By standardizing these controls and documenting your compliance as an operational habit, you aren't just optimizing today's checkout experience, you're actively protecting the future enterprise valuation of the entire company.
That puts an entirely different price tag on the cost of an action. It's not just about losing a single sale today, it's about preserving the total value of the business tomorrow. Take a hard look at your own operational baselines before your next major leadership meeting. Look at how your networks are structured, examine the friction in your checkout process, and ask yourself what the true cost of leaving the vault door open really is. Until next time, keep digging deeper.